Take two.
And I'm Drew Steck.
And this is
the Internet's Maximum Potential.
Season two.
Dose.
The deuce. That was Ben Folds with Not the Same. Did you get that? Where did you get that song, Drew? Illegally? On the internet?
Yes.
Because the giveaway for me was that it classifies him as Ben Folds 5.
Ben Folds 5. And it is not.
That is not. That is, that's from Rockin' the Suburbs, his first solo album.
Mm-hmm.
Was not on Reinhold Messner, the unauthorized biography of Reinhold Messner, the last Ben Folds 5 album. And that, I think, is sort of where my knowledge of Ben Folds dies.
Actually, I got a torrent of all of Ben Folds' music with it, like, properly categorized. And I have not loaded that into iTunes, so when I do, it will no longer be classified as Ben Folds 5.
Yeah.
But for now, it is. I do agree with that. Where you can tell, you can easily tell. There's little giveaways when you see people and you're like, that's illegal music. It's easy to show on an iPod because there's no album cover work typically.
Also the fact that it says, it's not only the wrong band, but it's unnamed album.
Which is not an album by Ben Folds. It's actually an album by a completely different
He'd be the type of guy, though, who would...
He would call it a named album.
I used to be a huge Ben Folds fan.
Oh, really?
I saw Ben Folds 5 at Summerfest, one of their last concerts. And I was just a huge Ben Folds fan. I loved his music. But it was weird because Ben Folds 5, that show, it was really fun. And the first time I saw him solo, it was fun. And all of a sudden, like, his fan base just became, like, the biggest assholes. And the concerts were not fun at all. And he changed. And he, like, lapped it up and was just not enjoyable whatsoever.
No, yeah. I think there was definitely a shift where, like, a lot of his fans became, like, really, like, pretentious hipsters.
Yeah.
And I don't know when that happened. And I think he's kind of circled back around out of being... more like almost mainstream in a way where he appeals to a lot of like different groups,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. But I think that he definitely did go through a period there when he just appealed to pretentious hipsters.
Now, as much as I am upset at the way things went for Ben Folds, he, to his credit, always has had good opening acts. Clem Snide I saw because of Ben Folds. The Divine Comedy twice I got to see, and Spy Mob. So I will, as much as I despised the way the fan base went, like when I saw Spy Mob open for him at Summerfest, like I ended up hanging out with Spy Mob afterwards, and I kind of abandoned the friend I was there with because the crowd were such dicks. and so, like, she got to see the concert, but I wasn't really paying attention.
No.
I was too busy hanging out with the rock stars, Drew.
Yeah, man. I did actually see a Ben Folds concert recently, right before I left Los Angeles, actually. On the night before I left, I saw Ben Folds at the Palladium, and his opening act was four different a cappella groups from college who sang different Ben Folds songs as a cappella. And one of them, my friend was in. I did not know she was in it, and I showed up to the concert, and... they're like, oh, we're going to... they had, like, three opening acts beforehand, one of which was this Irish folk... or, sorry, Australian folk band. It's hard to get those two mixed up. They're from, like, a weird part of Australia with all Irish accents.
What was the name? Brother?
Brother? Sounds like they could be Brother. That could be the name. I remember it was, like, a one-word title, and it was, like, kind of something different.
Because,
Female lead singer?
No.
No, okay, Brother. Different.
Nat Brother.
They're really like a little band. Like no one had really ever heard of them before, but they came to Los Angeles to open for Ben Folds. And it was a great show. If you ever get a chance to see a show at the Palladium in Los Angeles, I highly suggest it just because they... historical elements to it. Double is Studio 60 in the short-lived television series by Aaron Sorkin, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. Other than that, though, it was a good show.
And was that the main reason you were at the Palladium? Like, I got to see the set from one of my favorite TV series.
It kind of all came together. I got an opportunity to go, and I thought it would be a fun way to say goodbye to Los Angeles and Hollywood. But yeah, that was fun. And so anyway, coming back to my friend who was in the show, so they like called these groups and they're like, what? And Sarah Bareilles was there introducing the groups, little female singer-songwriter. And she had quite the mouth on her, actually, in terms of profanity. She was drunk, obviously, and because she was not performing.
That oh, okay. Night. She was just emceeing?
She was emceeing the college thing because she was in the college group from UCLA.
Oh, okay.
Which my friend was in because she also attends UCLA. And she was like, oh, here comes UCLA. And I was like, wait, what the heck? And so my friend Jen was there, and she hooked me up with, they had like kind of a, one of the sections of the Palladium is up top, and it's kind of more of a VIP section, but they had reserved that for the acapella groups that evening, as well as some other folk. So she got me up there, which was kind of fun. But all those people, like, she was with, like, some of them weren't really Ben Folds fans, so they weren't, like,
actually watching the concert.
They thought Not the Same was a Ben Folds 5 song.
Exactly, those kind of people. So, but it was a fun show, and I think Ben Folds is coming around.
Now, did you have a bit of a crush on Sarah Bareilles, but then you heard her mouth, and you were like, whoa, no, I say no, you're not the one for me. Is that a song by her? I hope to God that is.
Yes. No, that's not a song by her. That's a song by KT Tunstall.
I see.
They're both raven-haired singer-songwriters. So I see where you get that. They actually look remarkably alike, I think. KT Tunstall and Sarah Bareilles.
What's her song? What's the Sarah?
It's the...
Not gonna write you a love song.
Okay.
Ask for it. Did you have a bit of a crush on her and then you heard her lips? Her speak and you go...
Saucy lips.
Yeah. Not gonna write you a love song. God, that bit fell apart.
Anyway.
My knowledge of modern music... It's severely lacking.
She kind of, I wouldn't say perturbed me, but made me like, wow, I thought she was like the sweet girl next door.
Yeah.
But it turns out she's like the girl next door from a trailer park. And she's just very, she was all over the place that night. And then he called her back up to perform a new song off his new album. Not a new song, but a song off his new album called You Don't Know Me, which he performs with Regina Spektor.
Yeah.
Another crazy. Raven-haired, crazy singer-songwriter.
I've heard Regina Spektor. She had that one like really good song on her album.
Yeah, Fidelity.
I don't remember how it went. But then like the rest of her album... I remember
weird.
Really weird because my girlfriend Lee has the album and she got it because of the good song.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it is just very bizarre.
Yeah.
And then I do know the Ben Folds song you're talking about. It's a very good song.
Yeah, she fits perfectly. And her and Sarah Bareilles kind of have a similar vocal type. So yeah. She came up to sing it, but she was like, she was not the greatest. She was not the same. As I thought she was before. And then rounding out the concert, he was like, oh, I'm just going to do one more song here with my friend Josh. And my friend Josh come up. And like everybody thought, oh, it's just like his buddy Josh. He's doing this thing for his friend Josh. It was Josh Groban. Just was there hanging out. And I thought I had seen him because the people I was with, I was like, is that Josh Groban backstage? Just because I saw him like, I'm kind of a closet Josh Groban fan.
You're a Groban fan.
I'm a Groban fan.
You think Groban stole his material, but you don't say anything because you're...
So I saw him there. I was like, I'm going to fight you because you stole Groban's material. Mm-hmm. So I saw him there. I was like, wait, is that Josh Groban just hanging out backstage? And someone was like, no.
Shut up, Drew.
Wouldn't he have been opening or doing something? So,
wouldn't Josh Groban have been opening for Ben Folds? Wouldn't one of the most successful artists have opened for a considerably less successful, albeit successful artist?
Yeah, exactly. And so he came out and sang Still Fighting It. With Ben Folds, it was good times.
Nice. So you alluded to the fact to that we kind of acknowledged in the bridge episode, but you have left the City of Angels and are back in Wisconsin, which is why the internet's maximum potential has resumed.
It rolls on.
What went down for those that happened to somehow miss the bridge episode?
In short, Los Angeles stole my soul. I wanted it back, so I fought Rupert Murdoch and won it back and then left.
I think you've embellished just slightly.
Anyway, I was living in Los Angeles for the better part of 2 years, besides last summer when we recorded season one of the Internet's Maximum Potential, and I returned home for the summer for...
Specifically for that purpose.
Specifically that purpose, because I didn't get paid for it, so mm-hmm. I had to live at home and survive off the things in my parents' pantry. But I did it for the show, Rick. Anyway, moving on, I... lived in Los Angeles for the better part of 2 years, studying out there at a university known as Fullerton College, pursuing a degree in film. And then the market took a sudden turn for the worse, paired with the fact that I was kind of unhappy living there and realized that didn't want to be a part of the Hollywood scene. And so... I decided to move out and move back to the lovely state of Wisconsin to pursue independent filmmaking and finish my degree at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Now, it looks like one of the reasons why you moved back is now entering the studio. Would you properly introduce us?
Okay. Just stepping in the door is my girlfriend, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Katie Sh...
Go ahead.
We don't do last names on this show.
Hi, Katie. I'm Rick.
Hi.
Rick and Katie are meeting for the first time, my longtime collaborative partner and my longtime girlfriend.
I'm glad that I have a big orange blanket on.
Rick looks like a grandmother sitting on the couch.
That's the way to get to know me.
To paint a visual picture, he's wearing like a bright orange blanket over his knees, wearing like a Brewers t-shirt that could have been given to him by his grandkids. He like tried to keep him hip. He's just hanging out.
Essentially. So, Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How long have you and Drew been together?
Almost 10 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
10 months and this is the first time I've met you.
I know.
Collaborative partner I am.
Yeah, exactly. No. So, So Rick's girlfriend Lee has been on the show.
She's not here right now.
I'm
sorry you're not going to meet her, Katie.
Oh,
but,
she's been on the show before, so it only evens out that Katie joins the program.
Joins the program here. So, anyway, Rick and I were talking before the show about a particular thing, just real briefly, but we decided to save most of the interaction for the show.
Yes.
And I'll let Rick lead into it, because I think his story precedes mine.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of alluded to it last season on the Internet's Maximum Potential. Drew and I were making a movie 2 years ago called Sketchbook, in which we had it. It was basically half an hour worth of sketches, and we had a bunch of our friends appear in it. And one of our pals at the time, we offered him a part, and he was like, oh, okay, absolutely. And then he kept looking at the script, and he's like, oh, actually, I want these parts, and I want that part. And we're like, no.
He became very demanding.
Yeah.
First, he was very, like, he was the coolest guy ever for, like, the first 2 weeks that you knew him.
I never thought he was the coolest guy ever. I think that...
But he, in terms of not, like...
Don't taint my words.
Not, like, the coolest guy ever, but what I'm saying is, like, he was very... He was a good friend, at least.
Yeah.
Like, he was willing to be in our project and, like,
yeah,
give out his free time and seemed to not have to have too many demands or be a diva.
And suddenly, somehow, us offering him a part in a fun project where it was sort of a, hey, we like you, so do you want to do this with us? Suddenly, that became, well, you owe me more. And we said no. We you know, had people in mind for those parts already, and some of them were like the parts that you and I were supposed to play, and we're the ones spearheading the project, so we should get all the good roles. And and so
we kind of wrote and put the whole thing together. So in our fairness, like, it was a showcase of our talents. So.
It was a showcase of our talents, and specifically Carl Habermill, Mike Schmulz, and Andrew Ivor Nelson. I think those were the three that really got to shine the most. And Keeson also.
Keeson as well, in a very small part, but
got to shine.
But he was written in for more parts, but he never got a chance to show up for those. But in any light, like, it still was, you know, those guys took their roles and made them their own.
Yeah.
They didn't say, hey, we want these roles specifically, or we want this. We said, hey, here's a role that we like you for. And same thing is with this individual, except for he said, no, I don't want those roles. I want these different roles
because
I think they're funnier. He said, yes, they're funnier, but not, yes, they're funnier in a way, but we said, like, we think that you can grow more into this role than you could into one of those.
When you get a role, it's up to you to put butter and honey and whatever else you want on it. And he said, no, I don't want this role. I would like a cake.
Pretty much.
That's,
and
I think
Rick
that's...
and I are both not very great bakers. My girlfriend, on the other hand, Katie, is a fantastic baker.
Something I didn't know.
We're learning. We're learning here on the internet.
So anyhow, we'd given him these roles. He said, okay, I guess I'll do them. And then 15 minutes before we were supposed to start shooting,
Everyone was there. Like, a good, like, 5, 6, 7 people who were all, like, partially crew, partially actors. Like, everybody was there, ready to roll. And we're like, oh, he'll be here soon. You know, he was very, like, adamant that he'd be here.
Yeah.
Everything up to this point, up till 15 minutes before we're, like, literally going to shoot. And he knew what time we were going to start shooting. We get a phone call.
Yeah. Well, a phone. I think it's fair to call it a phone call. We get a phone call. Yeah. We get a visual transmission. We get a phone call in which he tells you that, I'm not going to do the film. The script just isn't very good. And, like, that to me, like, I wrote that, and I don't think that it's the greatest thing. I have no shame in saying I think it's funny. It's a solid script. And for him to go out of his way to not make an excuse but instead be an asshole about it and say, the script isn't very good, when he was interested in the script earlier in other roles, it's just a lie.
Yeah. Oh, and the thing is, like, it was like him saying, yeah, the script isn't very good. And I think everyone has the right to, like, disagree with someone else's art or, like, not, like, feel like it's something they want to be a part of, which is totally cool with me, because that's, like, that's what makes it art, is it, like, moves people and it doesn't move other people, or moves people in negative ways. And it seems like he had been totally neutral, if not moved in a positive way, by your script and thought it was funny, and then all of a sudden turned around and had a total 180 and said, no, I don't like it because of the script, instead of saying, like, my dog is sick, or making up some really just obnoxiously obvious lie, but at the same time, like, it's like, you're flaking out, that's fine. That's better than saying, than just taking, like, a knife to Rick Katschke and saying, your script sucks, Rick.
So, That was unpleasant. A year passed, and I started doing open improv in Bayview. And the second time I went, he was there, and he hadn't been there the first week. And it was just this feeling of, like, I don't think I can do this. I honestly was, like, about to leave. And then I decided, no, I'll stick around. I'm a better person.
Yeah.
And
just to get into that, like, for those of you who haven't done improv before or improv comedy, you really need to have, like, a trust or, like, some sort of, like, even if you don't know the people yet, like, you need to know that you're going to have some sort of positive chemistry with these people, or, like, some sort of ability to not want to punch them in the face.
Yeah.
And when you have someone that you really just can't stand to be around, it doesn't make for very good performing.
Yeah. Like, I think I'm weird because, like, it seems like in at least the Milwaukee improv that I've come across, like, if you're not friends with somebody, it's hard to perform with them. That's, like, the attitude that people have, where, like, with me, it's, I'll respect people that are good at improv, but I'm not necessarily going to go out of my way to become friends with them.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that makes sense.
You can have a working improv relationship without becoming friends with them.
Yeah.
And you can do a funny show and say, hey, that was a funny show. But at the same time, like, I don't think like we have to do this all the time together.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't even have a funny show with somebody that you don't like really like personally. And like the great comedians have done it alongside one another, but at the same time, it's like they didn't start off hating each other's guts when they were trying to perform.
Yeah, so,
which in this case is what it was.
So through circumstance over the course of the next few months, suddenly this improv group from the Open Improv people had developed. I was like the last person to be invited because I was sort of on the outside. I wasn't really friends with anybody, good friends with anybody in the group.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was in the group as well. And I lasted a few months with the group. We had sold out shows, and it just wasn't fun though. Like we had like one show that was awesome. That
yeah.
was like, oh man, everybody was supporting each other.
And then with shows like that, you always feel like, yeah, I can keep doing this, or like it always pumps you up for like three or four more shows.
Yeah.
But once that dies off.
No, and like the weird thing is, like, me and another guy, or you know, we sort of would talk and we'd have the same like things that we were disappointed about with the show or whatever. But nobody else in the group really thought it was bad. Like, they thought what we were doing was good.
They thought it was ready for primetime television.
Yeah, and like, people in the audience enjoyed it, too. But just that feeling of, like, I can't do this. This isn't funny. Like, this isn't good. You just fucked me over when I was up on stage. Like, you went out of your way
to
steal the scene. Or, like this guy, his thing drives me up the wall. He is obsessed with miming. He thinks that he's the words.
To the point where it detracts from the scene.
Yeah.
And the audience focuses solely on what this person is doing with his hands.
Yeah, and like, for no reason, like, he gives you shit about your miming in the scene. Like, you know, that's a slow way to bounce a basketball, or that's a weird place for a trophy to be, or just,
which are things that Rick always does in scenes. He always has bouncing basketballs.
I always have slow basketballs, and then I jump up and I pull myself onto a platform where there's a trophy.
Which I personally think is, you know, your comedic some of your comedic signatures. But this gentleman,
well, I mean, when two comedic signatures like that clash, when you always mime a slow basketball and a trophy on a high shelf. And he
we're
loves
kidding,
to bust
not,
you on.
That's not what Rick always does.
I don't think it was clear enough, so thank you for
Although in a review of The Shepherd, they also write about you
bouncing
a basketball.
Basketball.
So that's why I thought it was funny.
So I ended up quitting the group. And I continue to see him around, obviously, but there's just this feeling of like, God, I really can't stand him. And I've told my good friend who I do improv with, like, this person is insufferable. I can't stand him. And he kind of has the attitude of like, yeah, I get that, but you should get over it. But like, he's gone so far out of his way to be an asshole.
Specifically to you.
Just to me, but just in general. Like, he thrives on it. And he claims that he has this holier than thou, like, he's Christian attitude. Like, thinking that he's like a Christian person, but I'm cool with if you want to live that. I'm Christian, so I'm offended by that, or whatever.
Yeah,
yeah. But if you go out, if you're Christian,
but then
you say
offensive, and then you say other offensive things, which he has done in the past
all the time. He loves to go to the sickest place. Like he loves to
he
go dirty.
Yeah, and then when you do it though, he's like, "Oh, I'm offended
by
it.
Oh, that's terrible."
And it's like he lives this double standard life, which just really gets my goat.
Here's my other thing, and this is probably going to give away who it is, but he...
if it hasn't
already. I mean, I think that...
If this anecdote hasn't given it away, and I hope if he's listening to it, he can repent.
But when we were in the group, he taught at a theater at a high school, and when we were in Meanwhile, which was the name of the group, we did a fundraiser show to raise money for the theater program. And it was a night of improv where there were two groups that were like high school kids, one that he taught, another from like first stage, and then we went. And we did like 20 minutes. And it was at this high school auditorium. It was supposed to be for the theater department, whatever. He had it arranged that we got paid for that. That we got paid to do this fundraiser. And we each got paid $25, which is more than we make doing the show at the Alchemist Theater.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, just like, it's just so sleazy.
It's
oh.
like, it's like, you, it's a fundraiser. Like, yeah. Funds shouldn't be going
it's
to the performers.
It's a fundraiser in a group that you're in.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, oh my God.
He continually has a track record of like, just every time you try to get over the last thing he did, something new will come up just to piss you off even more than the last thing that you'll forget about it entirely, but you'll be focusing on the new thing till the next thing comes along. That being said, recently, right after I moved back, I went down to see a show at Comedy Sports. Performing in the show was my friend. I'd just gotten off work at my creative internship, which is downtown. And so it's a few blocks away, actually, from Comedy Sports. So I was like, oh, I'll call up my friend Keeson, the one we talked about from Sketchbook. I called him up and said, hey, what are you doing tonight? Because he said he might be in a show. And he's like, yeah, I'll be in the show. You want to come down? And also another friend of ours, Nick Chudnow, son of Dick Chudnow, who started Comedy Sports, who's, you know, also kind of who taught the class that all of us were, that we met this fellow in.
Yeah, that I met you in.
Yeah, that we met in. So we're this all, we're everything, the origins. If they ever made a movie about origins, it would all start there. Anyway,
my superpower is mining a slow basketball and a trophy on a high shelf.
That's where you learned how to harness those abilities. Dick's like Professor X, and he like taught you how to harness your slow basketball. It was kind of off base at first, but
At first it was regular speed. He's like, no, slow it down.
Regular speed isn't funny. Slow down your basketball speed. So I go to see this show with Keeson and Nick, and who else is performing on the other team in the show is...
Person. That we've been talking about.
Yes. And so he's on the other team, and I don't really like any of the other performers on the team, his team as well. So I make it as an audience member to go out of my way to try and like steer the team the other way, which, you know, was kind of rude. But what had happened before the show was that I had talked and hung out with some of the performers, him being one of the performers. We passed awkwardly in the hall a couple times. And at first, you know, I kind of looked a little bit differently than I did the last time I saw him. So I was like, maybe he doesn't recognize me. But after a while, it became very apparent that he knew who I was and knew that I was there. And some of the performers had went back and suited up and got in their costumes for the show, but then they wandered around a little bit before the show to talk to some of the audience members in queue, kind of waiting to go into the arena.
Sure.
And he had come out, and so did my friends, Keeson and Nick, and they both came over and said something to me like, oh, he did see that you were here, and was like, oh, what's that about? And they were like, he's our friend, so he's coming to see our show, and... he said something about the movie a couple years ago.
Are you serious?
He said something about the movie. He was like, yeah, so Sketchbook, he had said something about, like, where it went, and, like, they were like, oh, yeah, they just kind of put it up on the internet as shorts, which was the original kind of intention of it anyway. So, he was like, oh, it's nice. Like, just trying to, like, kind of rub it in. I think he was looking for some sort of, like, stab. Like,
we were trying to make
a festival, or, like, he got denied. Like, that was never the intent with that film, so it was, like, not really a big deal. So, anyway, he said that, and then at one point, I went over to shake his hand and be the bigger person, and he just kind of slowly kept those nuances of why I didn't like him kept creeping back in. I was like, you know what? We've kind of got a beef, but I'm going to try and solve it and get over it. So at least we can be in public with each other, and I don't have to, like, be upset with him.
Yeah.
And so I went over and was like, hey, how's it going? Not bad, you know. Kind of said that me and Rick still hang out and do stuff, whatever.
You name-dropped me.
I name-dropped Rick, just like, because I did stuff with Rick at Alchemist. You guys still hang out? I was like, yeah, we still hang out and do stuff and whatever. And he was like, oh, okay. And... just kind of kept being just kind of a jerk. And so, just little things, just really little things. Like pretty much everything I did seemed like it was small potatoes to him. And like, he just started listing off his accomplishments of like what he was doing with like improv and theater. And like,
what did he say?
He was like, oh, I've appeared in a couple independent films myself, whatever, Los Angeles, that's cool. So he tried to make it in Hollywood or whatever. And I was like, yeah,
God,
I guess.
Fuck that.
And so I was like, eh. And so we go into the arena, and he just once again starts doing the miming things and things like that, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to root wholeheartedly against this team. Whenever they ask for applause from the audience, I will give him none, and I will stand up and just cheer loudly for the other team. So that he, and I was sitting, the theater was kind of half full, but there was not many people up by the front, so I moved to one of the cabaret tables kind of right up in front.
And you just gave him a cold stare the
just
whole time?
Just gave him a cold stare the entire game. And whenever he was on stage, I just stone cold face. And like he pandered over towards my side of the audience a couple times because sitting right here like a bachelorette party that was kind of like in the area, so they kept kind of pandering to them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd look over in that area and I'd saw him look over to me a couple times and I would just give him just cold blank stares for whatever he was doing. Because when he wasn't being funny, he was like, I'll just pander back to the bachelorette party and they'll all cheer because whatever, because they're all hopped up on whatever bachelorette parties are hopped
moonshine.
Up on. Moonshine. A little bit of moonshine. That's what they serve at Comedy Sports, I guess. And
I don't know how the bar got the license for it.
No. We know a couple people who work the bar there. I wouldn't be surprised. They're kind of shady characters. Just kidding. They're good guys. But, yeah, no. So that was kind of my experience with him again. And you know what? I just shouldn't be around that guy because he just makes me upset. It makes me mad at him for being a jerk.
Didn't you send me a text like, you'll never guess who's here?
Yeah, I sent
the guy.
The guy.
Oh,
so.
Man. So what all have you been up to since you've been back in town?
Well, I started two jobs. The first of which I started almost immediately after I got here. And the job is kind of, it's the one I get paid for, and it's kind of like a summer job, definitely, where I go around setting up tents for different events and parties and things like that through a rental company. People call and say, hey, we want a tent for our party, and then we'll go deliver it and set it up, and then come back a few days later and pick it up. It's not a very complicated job, but
I think I understand it.
The first day, just to give you the thorough explanation for anyone who's really curious.
Somebody called, they wanted a tent. We delivered the tent. Picked it up a few days later when they were done with it.
They were done with it. That's the way renting typically works.
That's a good example.
So the first delivery I go on my first day, and this actually ties in very well, we go to the house. We're delivering. It was just tables and chairs for this event. We didn't need to deliver a tent. So we delivered the tables and chairs, and they were like, oh, we're like, what kind of payment do you want to do? Cash, check, or a charge? And they're like, oh, we're going to charge it. Then he sent a kid inside and was like, oh, go get Katie. So he goes inside to get
your girlfriend emerges.
Yeah, Katie. Girlfriend does not emerge. Woman comes out, hands us a credit card. The name on the credit card is my girlfriend's name.
Oh.
Minus the middle initial is different, but directly her name. And her last name is not that common of a last name. Like, not like a common name of like a Smith or like a Jones. Like, a very... how many times have you met somebody with your last name, I guess?
I've never met a person with my last name. I know they're out there. But
she knows...
Not that many of them.
But she's never, like, directly met someone with their last name. Which, like, you typically, like, look for people with their last name. If it ever pops up, like, on an airport loudspeaker, you're like, oh, that's my name. But, like, not... But, so there's another person out there named Steck. I've never ran into someone directly named Steck. I ran into a Steck, which was S-T-E-C-H,
you've
who I
never,
went to high school with.
You've never seen your family.
I've never seen my family. Never ran in. I was... nope. So, anyway, her name, and I was like... At first, we're like, is it stolen? Because the person I'm also working with knows my girlfriend, Katie, because we all go to church together. And it was like... so we all kind of are in like, a group of people who know each other. And we were sort of like, is it stolen? I was like, no, the middle initial is different. And I was just like, huh, that's very funny. And so that was my first delivery on my first day. So then my other job is a creative internship downtown for a media company. It's actually a nude media company that does
A nude media company? I'm working in the porn industry.
They need eloquent models. Eloquent way to say the pornographic industry. No. A new media industry, N-E-W. I can't speak today.
It's a new media industry. N-U-D-E.
So anyway, it's a company that does stuff kind of for the internet for larger name-based clients to throw out a couple like Kmart, Sears, Trek Bicycles, people like that who want to kind of show what their company does, the inner workings of their company, but you know, wouldn't make great TV spots, but would make great things for the internet, kind of like documentary-style commercials, but they do them for the internet. So, and they work in conjunction with four other companies. They're all started by the same guys who made films with a company called Purple Onion Films in Milwaukee.
Sure.
And the guy who started it was actually the editor for Mark Borchardt's American Movie.
Really?
So, and Mark Borchardt's around...
Chris Smith's American Movie?
Chris Smith's American Movie. Mark Borchardt, I've seen...
Starring Mark Borchardt.
Mark Borchardt has actually been around a couple times, and Chris Smith is one of the guys who is around, and the guy who I worked for was the editor on the film, and so he... They all got their different departments that they kind of head up.
Sure.
So that's what my other job is, and that's fun.
How many people that work there total?
It's actually a lot larger. Like when I first got the internship, because we did it over like coffee at the Milwaukee market, so I actually never went into the office when I like applied for the internship and like got it, and I got it through a friend who was like kind of really good friends with a producer over there for this company, and like kind of thought it was kind of like a small organization in Milwaukee, but it's actually pretty large. It's probably like about 50 people who work like in office day to day, and then larger than that, probably like 100 people who, probably like an extra 50 people in terms of like directors and editors and talent that they have on call for different stuff. So.
Nice.
And then there's about 5 of us interns over the summer who kind of work for free in college credit. So that
works out.
Which, as anybody who goes to college can tell you, that college credit is never free. So
I did some internships in college and I never got any credit for it. So.
So it's better than the Catchkeys.
It's better than my system.
Yeah, exactly. So I got lucky though, because it's like I they're like, oh, you have to call people in the department, and dealing with the film department or dealing with really any sort of university department, you're gonna talk to like 6 people before you actually talk to the person you want to talk to about something. And so I was like kind of hesitant in calling in, but it turns out one of their editors on staff is actually a professor at UWM.
A professor.
It's one step down from a professor.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like a professor in training.
It's like in between of an assistant professor and a professor. It's a professor.
Yeah, it's a new... It's kind of one of those new jobs. You know how they tell you when you're a kid you might have a profession that was never created?
Mm-hmm.
This guy apparently created this profession. He's the only person in the world who's a professor. He's a professor at the university. So that ended up being very nice and clean, so where I don't actually have to do anything about it. I get the college credit nice and easily. I just need to give him my name and student ID, and he'll talk to the people in the department, take care of everything else, which is nice.
Excellent. So.
And how about you, Rick?
Not working right now. I got laid off at the end of the... right after the conclusion of last season of The Internet's Maximum Potential, I was very downbeat. Because I still had spent the entire summer jobless, and right after that was recorded, I ended up getting a job with the Friends of Milwaukee Public Television, and I was in the auction department. It was like 4 people total worked for the auction, and it was sort of a job where the auction was in May, and so the entire time you were gearing up. It was like an election. Like running a campaign. So, like, the entire time you're gearing up for the auction, and some of the stuff, you just really, like, some elements of the job, you don't understand unless you've done the auction. Then it, like, becomes clear to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, did the auction. I ended up being on air a few times, not just for the auction, but I also was on during a pledge drive, and I came on in between programming, which was pretty funny actually, because they had like 10-minute blocks where it would come back in between. It was like an Andre Rieu concert or Celtic Woman, and it was me.
Celtic Woman.
It was me and the station operations manager, I think, and we just talked for like 10 minutes. And they had like little like bullet points about what we should talk about, but. Like, after a while, you're just basically repeating the same stuff. Like, if you donate $75, you'll get this CD. And if you donate $100, you'll get a DVD and the CD.
Yeah.
$150, you'll get tickets and the DVD
and
the CD.
And the tote bag.
Wouldn't it be wonderful?
The tote bag is what you always strive for in those donations, I think. It's like, once you get to tote bag level, you're, like, really a serious donor.
Wouldn't it be wonderful after a hard day of work? popping the CD in your car on the drive home, come home, and watch the DVD of what you were listening to in your car. And so, but it's all MATC students, and they have hand signals. MATC students doing the crew, the television crew, during, it's a live broadcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they have a signal, which is them making a circular motion, like a wheel going around, which means wrap it up.
Yeah.
And they have another one, which is them pulling their fingers apart like they were stretching a long piece of taffy, which yeah. means stretch it out, keep going.
Which just makes me hungry. And so I if I ever would see that, I would just...
You'd just start going, taffy, 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 taffy. Taffy.
Someone give me some taffy.
And so at one point, the guy who was the floor manager, is that the right term?
Yeah,
floor director.
Yeah, yeah.
He, like, I thought it was near the end of the 10 minutes, and so I thought I was coming to an end, and so... I look to him, and he gives me the stretch it out signal, which I'm surprised about. Yeah. And I'm like, ah, and yes, we'll have Celtic Woman back in just a moment. And he realizes, oh shit, that was the wrong hand signal. I actually meant to give him the wrap it up. So then he goes from the stretch it out to a wrap it up, like in a fluid motion. So
and like a third base coach.
Yeah. And so, like, oh shit, hold up.
Yeah.
And so I end up saying, I see the first motion and I go, and we'll be back with Celtic Woman back in just a moment. And then he gives me the wrap it up signal and I go, and that moment is now. So I had a good time working for them. I had a fun time during the auction. And after the auction, I was like, oh, man, I know exactly what I got to do now. I'm going to do this. I'm going to change this. I'm going
to,
you know.
Like, ways to better your job.
Ways to better my job, make the auction go better. Like, oh, man, these are all these extra things that I could be working on to make the auction better. And then about a week and a half later, I was laid off.
You were laid off.
Basically, the auction, we made over, it was four people, and we made over $1 million, but we're a department of the Milwaukee Public Television Friends, which is an office downtown. We really don't have that much communication with them, but we're still a subdivision of them. And even though we did fine with money, they're down, sponsorships, stuff like that is down.
Exactly.
And so the Friends as an organization had to do some cuts somewhere. Yeah. And I don't know if people downtown lost their jobs. All I know is I lost mine and was not expecting it at all.
No.
Especially because the week prior to that, I had signed a lease and picked up the keys to my apartment with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden it goes from, oh wow, we're in really good shape, to, oh shit.
Yeah, yeah. No job, more things to pay for.
Yep.
And yeah, not an awesome situation.
No, and so for about, I mean, this has been, it's been basically a month. Today is the 15th, right?
Yeah.
15th, lost my job on the 14th. Of May. Yeah. I lost my job on the 14th of June, so it's been one day.
One day. One day.
But
it's been a long day. It feels like a month, but it's been a day.
So it's been a month of looking for stuff. You're probably aware that there really isn't that much out there.
If you're listening to this and haven't, you know, if considering you're probably someone who uses the internet, you probably are aware on current events, considering the fact that the economy is not doing very well right now.
So, I mean, right now I'm just sort of, I'm in a two-man improv show with my friend Lee Rowley, who was in Sketchbook. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we had paid a little bit for it, so if I wanted to, I could claim that I'm a professional comedian because I am getting paid to do comedy.
Because that's your primary profession at the moment.
Exactly. So if somebody asked me, oh, what do you do right now, I would say, I'm a professional comedian. Unemployed, here's the worst thing about being unemployed is people always ask you, oh, did you find a job yet? And the thing is, if I found a job, I'd let you know.
I'd let you know, yeah.
But the fact that they ask, like, it's just an inevitable...
That's something that guy would ask you.
Yeah,
it's... On stage, in front of everyone.
Just, no, I...
While miming.
No, I haven't found a job yet. And so it's just like another level of embarrassment. And I don't think that any ill will is intended when they ask you that question. It's a good fallback question in terms of keeping a conversation going or whatever.
Yeah.
But usually it comes right away, like at the beginning of a conversation. So immediately it's like, oh,
the conversation
dagger.
Just takes a sad down. And for the person who asks it to you, you feel kind of awkward, like, I was hoping you'd say yes, so we'd have something fun, like, and interesting to talk about, and that's what they're hoping for, but, you know, they should know. They should know better.
And somebody asked me online, and I, like, it might have been you.
Yeah.
But I think you might have asked me online, not knowing this. I don't think it was you, in retrospect, but...
it was you.
No, it wasn't. But they asked me, and since it was the internet, I was more comfortable just writing back, no. I'll let you know when I do get one. Like, it was just sort of a, just for the future. Don't ask me that question.
Don't ask that question ever again.
Because I have terrible, terrible luck at finding these things.
But you know what, Rick? I am confident that this summer will not be like last summer, and that things will turn around for you, even though the country continues to get worse.
That's not true. It's not getting worse.
It's getting worse.
I've heard it's not.
I'm buying into it so that it gets worse.
Wait,
what?
You're buying into it so that it gets worse?
I'm buying into
the lie. You're putting money into the stock market so that it gets worse? What?
It's reverse economics. It's a risky... I'm going to stop talking.
Okay.
Right now.
Like, here's the thing. Like, but what profession should I go into? All right. I worked at Frederick Hospital for over a year. I got to see brain surgery while I was in scrubs. I worked in the public relations department as an intern. Did really cool stuff for them. I got to see a kidney transplant in scrubs. So I've seen operations firsthand. You know, not when you say that I got to see a surgery, a lot of people think they picture like the arena.
Yeah.
And no, I was like fucking
in the tiny room.
I was 3 feet away from an exposed brain.
Yeah.
And so I've done that. Then after that, I worked for the Milwaukee Bucks. We got to have dinner with Michael Redd and Desmond Mason. Did all sorts of stuff on the court. Danced in front of over 10,000 people. Had LeBron James throw his wristband right in front of me, where I was then mobbed by a group of fans.
Yeah.
So I've done the sports thing. And then I did television, where I was on live television. I was a nonprofit too, raised over $1 million. So even though I'm currently unemployed, I feel like I've done a number of things. I have, in addition to our show, I have my own show, Host and Guest, in which I've had some really wonderful guests.
Yeah,
I think I'm really proud of that program.
I think that program has outshined this program in many ways, to be honest.
But. I don't know. We got Katie. We finally landed Katie, so...
Yeah, finally.
We're on par.
I couldn't even land my own girlfriend.
I'm really busy, Drew. I'm sorry.
Drew, I'm sorry. She hangs out with me most nights, except for whenever we're doing the show.
Well, the thing was, we offered it to her, and she's like, oh, yeah, it sounds cool. I'll give it a listen. Oh, yeah, I enjoy the show. And then we were going to have her on, and she called, and she's like, listen... Drew, Rick, I just don't think the show's very good.
I don't think it's very funny. I think you guys are both just not very funny at all.
So,
Rick, I think that your past endeavors will enable you for something for the future that will outshine all of them.
Yeah, the one thing is for sure, whatever I get, probably be a really totally different industry. And I'll probably last about a year, and then
you get some awesome
get
stories, some
yeah.
awesome anecdotes,
yeah.
and then you'll move on to another profession.
And then get back to just trying to conquer them all, jack of all trades.
There you go. You're Leonardo. You're an unappreciated Leonardo da Vinci of your time.
I can I can live with that. Or, maybe that's what I should
or,
come to.
Or a thin, a boyishly good looks Matthew Broderick from Ferris Bueller in 1986.
My friend Lee and I, our two-man show was just reviewed by the Shepherd Express, and I was given the review that I'm relatively thin.
I like how the review starts out, like, it sounds like they're going to give you a really good review in the first, like, couple paragraphs. It's kind of like a, I'd say like a, like maybe like a 3-star review, I think is what they kind of
I would say it's a 3.5-star review. Like, and I don't know if he necessarily understood that he said that our show wasn't necessarily laugh out loud funny, but it was consistently entertaining throughout. And
that's the style of the show.
That's the style of the show. We have no intention for it to be hilarious, 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 hilarious. Because what we do is we get a one word suggestion, and for the next hour, we take that word and we start off with two characters, and they're just interacting based on that suggestion, and we add in more characters. And sort of like this world is created based on that word.
One word suggestion and what it spawns out, which is a lot of people seem to enjoy this style of comedy, including the Upright Citizens Brigade. Is kind of popular, not popular, but I'd say like brought it more to the forefront in terms of long form and improvisational comedy.
Yeah.
Whereas most people know it in its short form version.
Yep.
At places like Comedy Sports, where it's like, you know, to liken it to sprinting, I guess, it's like, that's kind of more like a 100-meter dash in
mm-hmm.
terms of, like, a lot of action really fast, whereas, you know, yours is more of, like, a marathon where it's like, you know, it keeps going and, like, you enjoy the entire thing, and it served its purpose, obviously, because the guy in the review said, you know, you walk away with memorable, funny bits that you think of, you'll never think about. In the review, he writes about a little bit about tiramisu that you guys did, but obviously whenever he looks at tiramisu, he'll probably think of that funny bit and chuckle to himself, which is the idea of the show.
And he also made a point of saying that, you know, at the end of the show, they had so many well-rounded characters, and that's the whole purpose. You know, it's basically, it's just two people, and we're doing all these characters, and it's so much fun, and you don't know where it's going to go. And it could just be, you know, a boring story, but we try to be realistic too. We try not to have it be absurd.
Realistic as well. So it's like all the things that you were going for in your show, you nailed, obviously, because he wrote them all down in the review.
Yeah.
It's just, I think him personally, like, either didn't get like the entire like function of what you were going for.
I mean, I think it's a good review, but I think the line that that he said that it wasn't consistently laugh out loud funny
makes it sound.
I think
like
that sort of missed the point just slightly, and I think I'm happy. I'm really happy with the review.
I can't believe
that our two-man show was reviewed by a theater critic.
By a theater critic,
really,
yeah, which is cool. So, but anyway, moving on to our guests. For a little bit, I was gonna ask the woman to my left about her summer job since we were going through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through job.
Nanny job.
You nanny?
Yeah.
Are you like super nanny or
she nanny? Nanny 911.
It's one 13-year-old kid.
And I wanted to get into this because she has the easiest job in the world, and continue to talk about what your job entails as the nanny of a 13-year-old kid.
Well, today was my first day. And we watched TV for a couple hours, and then we went to the pool for a few hours.
Not any pool, not like your community pool, but the pool at a country club, which is, they just redid the pool, so it's very nice. And she can order drinks from servers who go around on the family's tab of the kid who she's babysitting.
So we had lunch and ice cream today.
Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
It's a boy. So it's not like she doesn't deal with all like the girl drama. It's just a boy.
That'd be better,
just, like,
I think.
Is,
I am a girl.
Is there something?
Whatever.
Is there something off about him? Or
no, he's just.
He's a normal 13-year-old boy who enjoys
you
playing
can't
golf.
Leave a
13-year-old
boy alone all day every day.
Who enjoys playing golf?
You can sit and watch TV for 8 hours every day, and that's not good either.
Okay, during the summer when I was 13, I had two younger sisters, and I was watching them.
Yeah, because you had interaction. He'd be home all by himself.
The idea is to kind of give him interaction as well. But like most days he goes out and plays golf at the country club. And so she just sits by the pool while he's out playing golf. making sure that if he needs anything, she's there, you know, kind of like as a lifeline, or like if he needs to be driven somewhere or whatever, she's there. But I just think it's really funny. And then in my job, with the tent job, like it doesn't sound like kind of dirty, but like it gets pretty dirty because we also work in a shop with a lot of like rented machines and stuff. So we end up having to clean machines and stuff. And like moving these huge tent pieces around and like...
No, I know what you're saying.
Working with your hands and like getting in there. Like today I came home like pretty exhausted because I worked for 10 hours from like 7:30 this morning till 6. And she was like, oh, we sat by the pool. And like she text messaged me and was like, I'm bored by the pool. I was like, I love that. Like the greatest problem with your job is that you're bored.
Oh man.
I just had a hellish takedown in the middle of Sockville, in the middle of this like weird compound in Sockville.
Yeah, the prisoners, they need tents, you know?
Apparently. No, it was like this family for like this graduation party. They had it out in like their cabin in Sockville, which is like on like 90 acres of land that they own. So we had to drive to like the mid, because they're like, where their house is and where the tent was, is in this clearing. It's like all the way like in the direct center of where their land is. So we have to drive all the way out there. And it's the part of the day where it was blazingly hot.
Yeah.
We're out there, we're by a lake, but we're not receiving any sort of like coolness off the little like lake that they have. And this tent is the worst tent that we own. It's the most labor intensive tent. And like we never ever set it up because of the fact that like whoever calls in, like we never recommend this tent to anybody because it's so labor intensive. And like there's much easier tents to set up that actually look better than this one. For some reason, they really wanted a 30 by 40 tent, and it was just like, it was the least fun, the least, it was the most I've ever disliked this job was during that, and also the people I was working with, the most they've ever disliked their job, and both of them have worked there for like 3 summers and like 5 summers respectively, and they were just like, it was just the worst kind of day, and she's like, I'm bored, I'm like, great.
That's fantastic. How did you get this nanny job though, Katie?
They live across the street from my best friend. And she already had a nannying job, so when they needed somebody, she...
Where is this market for nannies coming from?
I know.
There's a huge market for nannies in Mequon.
Brick, that is what your next job should be. It should be a nanny. The Manny. That's what you call yourself. You call yourself Manny. The Manny.
That's how he became the Manny.
You'll be like Tony Danza and Who's the Boss.
I'll put on a thick... New York. Hey, what's going on, guys?
You could bear resemblance.
Let's clean it up.
If you grew your hair out just a little bit, you could bear resemblance.
I don't want to do that because I look so much like Matthew Broderick in Ferris Bueller.
You don't want to lose that
from 1986. That was the other comment,
which I think is a huge compliment.
Oh yeah, I love it. That would be like that's been like my dream
to live. Yeah,
to look. Like Matthew Broderick in 1986.
Oh, I think it's anyone who like ever was like wanted to be like that cool high school kid, like, and ever saw Ferris Bueller and saw it as like anyone who's ever seen a John Hughes movie wanted to be Ferris Bueller.
You know, I don't want to toot my own horn. Tout it. Oh God, what a great horn. I would say that I was a bit of a Ferris Bueller. I wasn't near as much of a troublemaker, but I got along with a lot of people in high school.
Definitely. I don't want to tout my own high school experiences, but I definitely was akin to skipping school since I lived in it was technically a closed campus, but it's in California, so all the buildings are open, so you can just kind of walk out of the building in between classes, just act like you're walking to classes, but walk to your car.
How old were you during this?
I was 17. 18.
You should have had a nanny.
I should have had a Manny.
A Manny would have made sure.
You would have kept me in line as a 17-year-old.
What are you doing, buddy? Come on.
He would have been at like a nearby like sandwich shop while I was in school. That's what he does during the day.
I'm bored. Gotta go get a sandwich. Is that true? Leaving school? Oh, I'm gonna give him a talking to.
That's what happened. Although he'd like spy on, it'd be like some sort of episode where he'd like spy on me and then he'd get into mishaps. But then somehow it'd turn around that he was like being distrustful by spying on me and then we'd both have to apologize.
I guess we both learned a lesson today then, huh? I'm going to keep this voice.
You're going to keep that voice.
Oh, man. It's a great voice.
It's a Tony Danza voice, huh? So, anyway, I just wanted to illustrate
Katie's job, and I think that she does a viable service.
Thank you.
And I think that nannies are, you know, the backbone of the economy. So,
now Drew, you said that you're going to make the season two a little different. Any ideas at how you're going to be editing the program or sprucing it up?
As you're listening to it right now, you can probably tell that the program's been kind of trimmed for content, I guess, or we trimmed the fat of the program, cut out just kind of bits that like either didn't run as well or kind of ran on a little bit.
Here's where I kind of think that that's a problem, because a lot of time we do callbacks and
they roll one into it if we miss a callback.
Yeah, well, like, I don't know. I don't know what you cut out of this episode, because there's been so much going back, like the Manny business. I don't know. What would you cut out right now?
What would I do differently?
Yeah.
I would cut out maybe a little bit about us talking about the guy.
Okay.
For a very long period of time.
Yeah. I can see that. And we didn't really do that much throwback to that portion.
So no. It was just kind of, it kind of felt like we were venting. And I think that, like, you know, I would go into that where it was like just kind of bits that seemed to run long. More so the way that you would with not saying, like, you know, cut out the best portions of things or cut out things so they don't work, but more sequentially make it so that it flows better, so that it's not like something like get to the next bit or like get to the next thing.
Are you gonna put in like little like audio breaks or video clips? Not video clips, but sound clips.
We'll put them on, but like, you won't be able to see them.
Like I did that little song for the Manny, and then you can put on the song from the Nanny, the TV series, which I was singing. Or you could do like Tony Danza, and then have a clip of Tony Danza or. When we said Ferris Bueller, just all of a sudden,
oh yeah,
chicka chicka bow bow,
oh yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we'll have to just put the entire song. Oh yeah.
So
it's like a 6-minute song.
As you're listening to this right now, you've probably already heard these bits because it's being edited retrospectively from inside the show, which is happening right now.
And if you're listening to this right now and there's been those bits, this goes to show that Drew is not a good editor, because if I was editing it, this part would not be playing.
Do you want to get to...
I think we should get to recommendations.
Get to recommendations.
Is that what you were
alluding
indicating?
To, yes.
Okay. Let's go with, first of all, Album of the Week.
Album of the Reek. I would throw out...
I would not include this
not
one.
Not include this one. No. I'm going to... My album pick of the week would be... I talked about it earlier, so we'll say Ben Folds, but not Ben Folds. It's Ben Folds' music, sung by a cappella choirs, called Ben Folds and A Cappella, and it's several college a cappella choirs. The ones that performed at the show, I think two of them are on it, and then I think... there's 10 more from across the country from really good a cappella programs performing different Ben Folds songs, including Not the Same.
Cool. I'm going to go with Ben Folds 5, the unauthorized biography of Reinhold Messner, their final album together. I don't know if it's necessarily as good as their previous albums, but I enjoy it. Katie, do you have an album that you listen to when you nanny that you would recommend?
I would recommend the band Sparks the Rescue. They only have one album. They're an awesome band from Maine.
From Maine.
Yeah, they were in La Crosse a couple months ago.
All right, we're running out of power. Is that what that just said?
Yeah, we got 9 minutes.
Okay, real quick then. another album
another
pick of the week.
Rick.
No, a film pick of the week.
Film pick of the week. I'm going to go with... the most recent Will Smith flick, 7 Pounds. Katie and I watched it about a week ago, I think. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was subdued, but like it was the kind of movie where it was like, you know what, that was a good story. And like, not like I could see where it wasn't like highly marketable, because it, you know, Will Smith's films have been like typically in the past highly marketable.
Yeah.
But I also kind of like inadvertently know the writer of the film through a family friend who is good friends with the writer.
And so it was kind of good to see his work and see what he came out with and see it applied to. When I first heard the idea and concept for the story, I was like, oh, I don't know how that'll apply to, you know, Will Smith. But he did a great job with it. I think it was a really good movie.
I'm going to go with the original Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. I just saw it for the first time this past weekend. My girlfriend Lee and I watched it together, and it's fantastic. Walter Matthau, of all people, like, totally kicks ass in that movie. And it's just one of those where you watch it, and it was made in the 70s, so it's, I mean, it's not really all that old, and there's absolutely no reason that they, okay, I guess it's 35 years old, but there's no reason why they need to remake it. And I guess the remake is terrible.
That's
the word.
That's what I've been hearing as well. Funny that you say that. I was just having a discussion online via chat with one of my friends, Peter, who had just watched the original as well and was talking about like how thrillers these days use way too many quick cuts, and how the old one was great because it used like more longly
long shots
and
yeah, it's really cool, and like, you know, people die in it, but they like cut away before like someone shot or whatever.
Exactly.
It's very good.
It does a better, he was just saying like how thrillers he wished were more like that than what they've now become, where it's like they play off cheap emotion to
yeah.
get a thrill as opposed to like
a slow build.
As a slow build, yeah.
Katie, film recommendation, a film pick.
I can't think of anything.
You can't think of any? Did I steal?
Super great.
Super great?
Super great.
7 pounds is good.
7 pounds
is good.
I
haven't really seen that.
All right.
Okay.
Cool. Mrs. Doubtfire is a great nanny film. Something to consider.
There we go.
Okay.
We'll throw out Mrs.
Doubtfire.
I was watching that the other day.
Holds up.
I forgot how much I missed it.
Okay, before the battery dies out, I think we should probably say goodbye.
Sayonara. Oh, we were going to go with a stack deck real quick.
No, I got nothing to stack deck
you on. You got nothing to stack deck me? Katie can throw out a stack deck.
I don't know what that means.
Anything that Drew's fucked up.
Anything that I've done wrong.
Apparently everything yesterday.
Everything yesterday. Yesterday was not my shining, like, everything I said or came out of my mouth. And anyone who's ever
heard Ralph, I'm going to stack deck you for saying Ralph.
And Ralph. And for mispronouncing words throughout the entire program. From, like, 2 minutes in all the way out. I'll stack deck myself for that.
I was going gent.
I'll stack deck myself back for saying, my mouth is tired and it's late, so I work 10 hours.
He's spent 10 hours with tents today.
I spent 10 hours tenting today.
And it's been a tense day.
It's been,
oh!
And with that, we end the inaugural episode of the second season.
You can inaugurate this episode, yeah.
Inaugural.
All right, I've been Rick Kashke.
I've been Drew Stem.
And that was Katie, no last name.
Katie, no last name. And
this
has been the Internet's Maximum Potential.
I was trying to get Katie to say it.
Yeah, okay.
Here we go.
What it was called.
And this has been the Internet's Maximum Potential. There we go.